my name is Lily Chaudhry, and you're listening to Happiness Now, Secrets to Success from the East and West. This podcast is all about empowering us to achieve happiness and success in every aspect of our life, and we'll discover some of the wisdom that's found in different cultures about this topic. These talks are based on the works of Gautam Ali Shah. He's a renowned teacher, trainer, and motivational speaker for over 15 years based in Lahore, Pakistan. And today we're going to present a book review. So most of Gautam Ali Shah's talks are motivational seminars, but on occasion he does do book reviews. These books are usually the ones that have influenced him the most in his life and in his personal development trainings. The book that we're going to review today has influenced millions of readers across the globe for decades, and it's called Think and Grow Rich, written by Napoleon Hill. And it was first published in 1937. And it was written for the sole purpose of trying to get people out of poverty and misery and give them the tools to attain success and fortune. But it's not really just about making money. It's actually about having abundance and success in all aspects of life. And the story behind this book is as fascinating and amazing as is the content of this book. And we'll discuss both in today's podcast. This book really can't be told without discussing the amazing life of Andrew Carnegie, and we'll see why a bit later on. Carnegie was born into a poor family in Scotland, and at the age of 13, he immigrated to the U.S. with his parents and his younger brother. And even with him working at the age of 13 in a cotton mill in Pennsylvania, his family was barely surviving to make ends meet. So he continued to work to support his family. By the age of 24, he was working as a superintendent at the Pennsylvania Railroad. He had a huge appetite for learning, and he was lucky that a local colonel allowed young men free access to his personal library, which Carnegie used as his education. Soon, Carnegie got an opportunity to buy some shares in a company, and he mortgaged his house to do so. Then, through his hard work, he bought his first company. It was a company that introduced sleeping cars for the first time on U.S. railroads. And then he went into iron, railroads, and oil wells. And by the age of 30, Carnegie was involved in steel production, and he ended up building the largest steel manufacturing company in the world. And in 1901, at the age of 65, Carnegie sells his company to J.P. Morgan for $480 million before retiring. And by the way, this sale allowed J.P. Morgan to create U.S. Steel, and it made Carnegie the richest man on earth. The website Carnegie.org compares his wealth to modern-day billionaires at their peak, and he is at the top, with Bill Gates worth only half of what Carnegie was worth in his day. But this amazing story doesn't stop there. He went on to be one of the biggest philanthropists known to mankind. He made a pact to give away all his earnings in his lifetime. He said, "The man who dies rich dies disgraced." And today, his foundation has paid for free libraries, museums, colleges, schools, and trusts all over the U.S. and U.K. And now we'll bring in Napoleon Hill into this story. So as a teenager, working as a reporter, Napoleon Hill was asked to do a story on Carnegie, and he went and interviewed the then 73-year-old. Carnegie told Hill his life story and said, "It's a shame that each new generation must find the way to success by trial and error when the principles are really clear-cut. What people needed," Carnegie said, "was a philosophy of achievement, a compilation of success principles from the country's greatest businessmen and leaders to show the commonality of their stories, to serve as an inspiration and enlightenment for those wanting more in life." And then Carnegie challenged Hill to commit 20 years without any pay to research this philosophy of success. And in return, he would introduce Hill to the wealthiest and most successful men of the time. And Hill jumped at the opportunity. So after their meeting, Hill opened up his entire social circle to Hill and allowed him access to interview over 500 moguls, the titans of the time, including Thomas Edison, John D. Rockefeller, Theodore Roosevelt, Alexander Graham Bell, Charles Schwab, and Henry Ford, to name just a few. And through his own career struggles and creating a family for himself, Hill pursued this mammoth effort. Hill became an advisor to Carnegie, and with Carnegie's support and backing, he spent almost 25 years doing field research, and he formulated a philosophy of success, drawing from the thoughts and experiences of many rags-to-riches moguls from Carnegie's elite social circle, all of which he put into this timeless book, Think and Grow Rich. And I want to add a few thoughts that Qasim Ali Shah has here on successful people. He says that it's important to know every successful person is likely to be surrounded by successful friends. And being like-minded is not dependent on proximity. Rather, being like-minded means having similar dreams, goals, and visions. So it's no wonder that Carnegie's social circle included many of the greatest and richest minds of his time. And he knew that they all had a similar thread running through them, a philosophy of success they all shared. So this is also a good reminder to us to try to be with like-minded people that share a similar philosophy with us. And it'll help us to attain those goals that we want to achieve in life. Okay, let's go on to the book. Until now, over 100 million copies of Think and Grow Rich have been sold worldwide. And it's the first popular book ever to be written about the topics of success and personal development. And it's said that the book is credited with producing more success stories since its publication than any other book. A lot of people claim that this is the book that helped them make it big. And Qasim Ali Shah also credits this book for teaching him the essential principles of success and allowing him to teach them. The original version of this book is almost 400 pages, and at the core of it are the 13 fundamental principles or factors that make up the philosophy of achievement. These are those things that the world's most accomplished and affluent people have in common as regards to the reason for their success. And we'll take a look at these now. Okay, so the first principle is a burning desire. According to Hill, every extraordinarily successful person has a burning desire to succeed. And I want you to focus on the entire phrase, not just desire, but burning desire. And that means to have passion, enthusiasm, and an unrelenting motivation to achieve something. And although the origin of our desire is internal, it's something that comes from within us, but to test ourselves to see if we actually have this type of desire, we can look at our actions and attitudes. Are we motivated to pursue something so much that we'll be working hard to achieve it? Qasim Ali Shah says he remembers he spent many days and weeks and months and years in his early career as a motivational speaker, driving to far-off locations, giving free talks, mainly because he had a passion for the topic. Even today, and he doesn't talk about this a lot, but he does a lot of pro bono work, giving talks at women's shelters, in prisons, to young kids at schools, because he is so passionate about what he does, that it's not the money that motivates him. He says that oftentimes in the morning when he's leaving to go to work, he'll see this guy in his neighborhood who's outside playing cards. And sometimes he sees him in the morning, and again when he comes home at night, he still sees him out there playing cards. And he says the chances are that this guy is probably not too successful in his life, at least not in his career or business, because he obviously lacks any passion for work. Okay, the second principle for success is applied faith. And this is a state of mind where we're making an effort with a certain sense of certainty that we will achieve our goal. And it was Dale Carnegie who said, "If you believe in what you're doing, let nothing hold you up in your work. Much of the world has been done against seeming impossibilities. The thing is to get the work done." I know I've mentioned my sister Robbie a few times in our podcast, mainly because a lot of podcast listeners already know her. And they know the story of Adnan and about the hit podcast, Undisclosed. I won't go into detail about Adnan's story, but it's a case of wrongful conviction. And it was my sister's total faith in him and her total certainty that he would be freed that made her continue to work for him for the past 18 years or so. And although he's not home yet, as of a year ago, he's officially not considered convicted anymore because his conviction was overturned. And the team at Undisclosed Podcast is working on other cases of wrongful conviction as well. And it's their belief and conviction that they can make a difference that's gotten them this far and will continue to take them to further success. So faith plays a crucial role in our success, and it carries us in times when we may not have anything else. The next principle necessary for prosperity, Hill says, is called autosuggestion. It means self-talk or affirmations. He calls it the medium for influencing the subconscious mind. Tony Robbins says that the quality of your life is directly proportional to the communication between you and you. And I know we've mentioned this quote before, but it's a powerful truth, and the way that we talk to ourselves shapes our minds and attitudes. Auto-suggestion is always happening while we're taking a shower, while we're working out, driving our car, in the checkout line, wherever. It's probably happening. And there's a famous saying that thoughts become words, words become action, and action becomes destiny. So the successful person has strong intrapersonal communication, saying things like, yes, I can, or yes, we can, or I can overcome this obstacle, I can do this, I can win. So what we say to ourselves is an important tool that can help us to achieve. And what this book helps us understand about this principle, and really every principle, is that it can be learned by everyone. And if we implement it, it will help us to prosper in life. Okay, the fourth principle for growing rich, according to Hill, is specialized knowledge. And I'll read an excerpt from his book, because when he says specialized knowledge, he doesn't just mean having an expertise in something. He means to be able to intelligently use our knowledge. So he writes, there are two kinds of knowledge. One is general and the other is specialized. General knowledge, no matter how great in quantity or variety it may be, is of but little use in the accumulation of money. The faculties of the great universities possess in the aggregate practically every form of general knowledge known to civilization, but most of the professors have but little or no money. They specialize in teaching knowledge, but they don't specialize in the organization or the use of knowledge. The principles listed here are not only for getting rich, but they can be used to attaining other types of success and achievements we want in life. Imagination is the fifth principle we need for achieving prosperity. Imagination here is described as the workshop of the mind. Hill writes, the great leaders of business, industry, finance, and the great artists, musicians, poets, and writers became great because they developed the faculty of creative imagination. There's an interesting research carried out in the 1950s that showed that the vast majority of high achievers were daydreamers. The lack of imagination, Hill says, kills all the opportunities that are around us. I just remember, everything that we see around us, that we use every day, all the inventions that are coming out, they were first born in somebody's mind. And if we can't conceive something in our minds, it can't physically be created. If we can't imagine ourselves making it big, then it probably won't happen in real life either. Edison said, to invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk. So it's our imagination that's more important than anything. And number six is organized planning. My husband's parents come from small villages in northern Pakistan near the city of Mirpur. They grew up having to work hard, even as children. They worked in fields and markets, and they didn't have the opportunity to go to school. To this day, my mother-in-law can't read. But their story is amazing. In 1969, as a young married couple, my mother-in-law and father-in-law immigrated to England. They had almost nothing in their pockets. They didn't know English, but what they did have is belief, a willingness to work hard, discipline, and a plan to succeed. They're actually a good example of a lot of the principles that we're discussing. They worked multiple jobs, they did double, triple shifts, they started different businesses, all the while having a family of five kids, and sending money to family members back in Pakistan, and also helping fellow immigrants settle in the UK. My husband tells me that his mom would save every penny she could to put into savings to start up their first business. She used methods like committees, and this is something a lot of people in Pakistan do to help them save money. The basic principle is to start with a small group of people that you trust, and each person contributes the same amount of money for a set amount of months. So let's say for 6 months, if everybody puts in $500. So for each of those 6 months, one person would get the full $3,000. So it helps people to save money. But it all starts with having a plan. They knew they wanted to create a good life for them and their kids and be able to help others. They ended up having many successful businesses, including furniture and carpet stores. And now they've been very comfortably retired for the past 10 years or more. And they have over a dozen properties around the UK. And they're a huge inspiration for me, and I hope for my kids as well. But they had to plan every step that they took. They planned every penny. They planned every day very carefully to get to the level of success that they have now. Okay, the seventh principle for prosperity is proactive decision making. Hill says this is the opposite of procrastination. So basically, this factor of decision making really has to do with conquering and overcoming our procrastination. He talks about a study where over 25,000 men and women who had experienced failure in their life said the major reason of their failure was a lack of decision. And in another analysis of several hundreds of people who had accumulated fortunes well beyond $1 million, disclosed the fact that each of them had the habit of reaching decisions quickly and of changing them slowly. And the people who fail to accumulate money, without exception, have the habit of reaching decisions slowly, if at all, and of changing these decisions quickly and often. I lived in England for about 7 years. I only recently resettled back into the US about 2.5 years ago. So for 5 years, I was working as a test manager in Rugby England. And I remember that there were so many changes in my company those 5 years. I had 4 different bosses. Our team got cut and chopped up so many times. I was lucky enough to survive all the cuts. But the quick and quickly changing decisions that were being made by upper management was creating havoc on the staff. I mean, nobody felt safe. There was low morale, and not a lot of work was getting done because of the constantly changing decisions. So it's crucial to be able to have good judgment and make quick decisions in the first place, and then be slow to change anything after that. And that's a trait of a successful person. The eighth factor to achieve success is persistence. There's a story of a great Sufi poet named Khwaja Ghulam Farid from the 1900s. He's very famous in the Indian subcontinent. He was 5 when his mom died, and he was raised mostly by his older brother. At 8 years old, he memorized the entire Quran, which is a holy book in Islam, and at 12, his father passed. His brother would teach him about God and spirituality. And at 28, when his brother also died, he left the city and began a life in the wilderness, in a place called Ruhi, to explore the mysteries of nature, of truth, and his supreme creator. And he remained in this search for truth for about 18 years, until he felt that he had attained some wisdom and the goal that he had set out for. He later wrote extensively about this life in the wilderness during his quest. He spent the remainder of his life traveling and teaching about love and peace, and he spoke and wrote in 7 languages and wrote several books in poetry and prose about the love of God and the love for mankind. His poetry lives on today in many languages, and there are schools, streets, and towns named after him in Pakistan and India. Ghulam Farid wrote, "Those who retreat in the middle of their journeys become futile." Farid may not have been an example of attaining material riches, but he achieved his goal, and in his quest to find truth and wisdom, he persisted, and he was successful. So staying the course is the key. Hill writes, "Without persistence, you will be defeated, even before you start, but with persistence, you will win." Calvin Coolidge couldn't have said it better. He said, "Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not, because nothing is more common than unrewarded talent. Education alone will not, because the world is full of educated failures. Persistence alone is omnipotent." And that's from our 30th president. Okay, the ninth principle is what Hill calls having a mastermind alliance. He says that this is an alliance of 2 or more minds working in perfect harmony for the attainment of a common, definitive objective. And he said that most successful people on the planet have some type of mastermind group or have like-minded people as friends. And we talked about this a bit earlier. So like-minded people are those who share our values, our visions, and dreams and goals with us. And we see this in nature, that animals of the same species generally live together. You'll see a school of fish, a colony of penguins, a herd of elephants, a troop of monkeys, and so on. It's because they look like one another, they are alike, and we grow when we're surrounded by those who are like us. I think we've all seen this image and quote online. It's a picture of a large pride of lions walking towards the camera, and it says, "Surround yourself with those on the same mission as you." Google it. It's quite inspiring. So Hill so believed in this principle of having a mastermind alliance that he details it in his other works, The Master Key to Riches, Your Magic Power to Be Rich, The Law of Success, and even in his television series he had in the 1960s. Mark Twain noted, "Keep away from people who try to belittle your ambitions. Small people always do that, but the really great people make you feel that you too can become great." And number 10, the 10th characteristic for success, and this is the last one we're actually going to detail about, is sex transmutation, as Hill puts it. It's basically about channelizing our sexual energy into other areas of life, such as our profession. Hill writes, scientific research has disclosed two significant facts. Number one, that the men of the greatest achievements are men with highly developed sex natures, the men who have learned the art of sex transmutation. And number two, the men who have accumulated great fortunes and achieved outstanding recognition in literature, art, industry, architecture, and other professions were motivated by the influence of a woman. So basically he's saying, if we can control our base desires, we can use that energy elsewhere in a more productive way. Siddhartha Gautama, the founder of Buddhism, also known as the Buddha, lived an opulent life growing up. And then at the age of 29, when he realized the suffering of the common people outside his palace, he decided to leave everything and ventured into the jungle. And he became a part of a group of ascetics, people who give up all worldly pleasures. And he did this for many years, and he deprived himself so much so that he was almost skin and bones from not eating and drinking. But after 6 years of this ascetic life, he realized that the correct path to find enlightenment was a middle path. And he continued his journey towards that. And after many years, he reached the state of wisdom that he searched for, and he started teaching. And he still advocated celibacy, especially to his disciples and monks. Even today, Buddhist monks abstain from any sexual conduct, but it's for the purpose of avoiding any suffering that might come with hyper desire or emotion, and to be detached from the world and renounce all material things, but primarily because avoiding sex helps one to have self-discipline and self-control, helping to reach their goal, which is attaining enlightenment. So Buddhism's advocacy of celibacy is not because it sees sex as sinful, but for purely practical reasons. And in this sense, it is similar to what Hill's saying. In Sufi history too, we see that some of the great saints fell in love with a human being before transmuting their passion into divine love. We talked about Waris Shah's life in episode 5 of our podcast, Spiritual Awakening. If you haven't already, please have a listen to it. So Waris Shah suffers from heartbreak from a love that he never got. And he takes that pain and he turns towards God and becomes a world-renowned poet and writer. So he took his passion and energy and put it into his work. Hill says that after analyzing over 25,000 people for over 12 years, the vast majority of people who attain success usually do so after the age of 40 or even 50. And he says that a major reason for that was that in this later stage of life, people are finally less obsessed with sex and wasting their time and energy on chasing after it. But what I found really interesting is Hill's findings on love. He says, and I'm paraphrasing here, sex alone is like a cyclone, but when love is mixed in it, the result is calmness of purpose, poise, accuracy of judgment, and balance. The emotion of love brings out and develops the artistic nature of man. And he says, again, I'm paraphrasing, that if you think you're unlucky because you have loved and lost, you're wrong. A person who has loved can't truly lose, because love is one of those things that comes and goes as it pleases. One who has truly loved can never lose entirely. And he goes on, that there should be no disappointment over love, because the major difference is that love is spiritual while sex is biological. No experience which touches the human heart with a spiritual force can possibly be harmful. I thought that was beautiful. And I think it can also give comfort to so many people who long for some love that they once had. But anyway, this section is about using our sexual energy in a more productive way whenever we can. Okay, So moving on, because the next three principles are kind of related and they're quite deep, we're just going to quickly go through them. Number 11 is the subconscious mind. So our subconscious is the real mastermind that's deciding what happens in our life. And we control our conscious mind by using things like meditation because we can try to tune into our subconscious this way. Number 12, the brain. When we visualize something, our subconscious mind can't differentiate between a scene that's a figment of our imagination or actual physical reality. So we should use repeating affirmations and creative visualization for those things that we want to accomplish. I'm sure we've heard of daily affirmations, a visualization board, things like that. And number 13th is called the sixth sense. And this is basically our intuition, our gut feeling. It's where we can get answers to questions that we otherwise wouldn't know about. And these answers may come to us as hunches or gut feelings. And this is why they should not be ignored. Okay, so in conclusion, so today we discussed the inspirational story of Dale Carnegie, the amazing pact that Carnegie and Hill made, and then the 13 main principles to success and riches that Hill compiled in his book, Think and Grow Rich, which took him 25 years of research and interviewing hundreds of the most affluent people of his time. Hill concludes the book with talking about our fears. He lists the most common fears and their solutions. Essentially, he says that any fear that we have can be conquered by our decision-making. If we make a firm decision to overcome it, we can succeed. And I'll end with this. Napoleon Hill writes, "Life is a checkerboard, and the player opposite you is time. If you hesitate before moving or neglect to move promptly, your men will be wiped off the board by time. You're playing against a partner who will not tolerate indecision." Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate all of you for listening. And if you've enjoyed today's podcast, please share it with others. And of course, please share your comments and questions with us anytime through our website, www.happinessnowpodcast.com, or send us a message through Facebook or Twitter. And until next time, I'm Lily Chaudhry. Please take care and take control.